Blog Talk Radio. would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our July 29th, 2017 episode. We started this journey in November of 2008. We've got over 700 of these episodes. I don't know how time has flown by. Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm groovy. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. My guest tonight is Nikki Wonder of the band The Bloodthirsty Virgins. And we just heard the title track, I would say, from the album. Although, the album is just amazing. We played it the other day in its entirety on Independent Showcase. And everybody I play it for, Nikki, loves it. It's such an incredible album, and it just flows together. And we want to talk tonight about how that just doesn't happen. I mean, a lot of work goes into that, and we want to talk about that. But I just, first of all, just want to thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And welcome.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you. My mind was blown the other day when you played the entire album. I couldn't believe it. Totally thrilling.
Well, what the idea behind everything was when I started doing this was that I would do the music showcase on Wednesday, and I would play the music of the group or the artist that we would have on that Saturday. So we would give a really good, you know, foundation for the listeners and the people that have been supporting independent musicians for a long time. And I just think it's really cool because I like breaking down the songs and I like breaking down the albums, but I think, you know, I am old school, Nikki, where I love the album and I love the concept of the album. I like the two sides. I like the LPs. I like it in my hand. I love the whole feel of it. I love the way it sounds. And when I play a song, sometimes you don't get the full feel of it. When you guys put this together, I'm pretty sure, you know, what you were thinking, you know, the songs blended together with each other, I would imagine, and we'll talk about that. But I think it's really cool. I think sometimes people lose the feel of it. There's so much going on today, so much music. There's so many things happening. People can access music instantaneously. You can, like my daughter turned me on to Apple Music. So if I hear any album or anything, any song ever, I can be listening to it in a couple of seconds. And I love that, but I also love the way of, I know I'm rambling a little bit, but to get somebody to just focus in on the music, you know, forget about what's going on in the world and all the other stuff happening and just listen to the artist and listen to what they have to say and listen to the music. And that's why I like to play the albums in their entirety. And I like to play that. I remember the old album oriented stations in Columbus back in the 60s and 70s where they would do that, and it would just blow my mind because, you know, I didn't have access to a lot of the albums, and I guess that's a long answer to, I just really like to do it.
Yeah, no, I totally get you. It seems to be almost like a lost art to just, you know, sit down and open up the gatefold and look at what they put in there and, you know, really, really enjoy the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, to kind of drink it in, to kind of just, you know, I in my office when the kids, you know, my wife and I, we have 5 grown kids, and when they come over, I like to like kidnap them and bring them in here and play, mm-hmm. you know, the turntable and play the albums and kind of mm-hmm. blows their minds a little bit, Nikki, when I can play an album that was made 50 years ago, and they're thinking, oh my God, that's just incredible. But
yeah,
but
that's,
I think,
awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. But what we want, first of all, bloodthirstyvirgins.com is the website, so that people can know to get that. Your record label, sciotarecords.com. Any other websites or anything that, you know, I like to get this information out there because sometimes I'll forget to mention it. Any other websites of importance?
We're fairly active on Facebook, just trying to promote shows that are coming up and keep people aware of what's going on. But really the website does list out everything pretty fresh and updated, you know, regularly. So.
Okay. Is there any projects or gigs or anything going on you'd like to mention? with a band?
Yeah. I mean, we've got a few gigs coming up. I think our next gig is in Athens, Ohio, on the 13th of August, and it's at Jackie O's. And,
okay.
And then we've got a couple more gigs after that, one in Reynoldsburg at the Dark Horse Tavern. I'm excited to play. It's a fairly new venue that seems to be bringing a lot of acts in. And I think CD 102 after that. But we are starting to work on our second music video, starting to collaborate with the director and filmography guy and just come up with that kind of working concept. And we'll be shooting that pretty soon.
How does that work? I mean, In the End is probably the one you're talking about that you have a video for that, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And that is so cool. And one of the things that I've been doing lately is, like, you know, when I hear a song or I see a video and things like that, I don't know if people understand all the work and everything that goes into it. And it's just so incredible. And that's why I like, you know, kind of talking about it at the beginning of the show, how people should just kind of mellow out and take their time and listen to it or watch it. Explain to the listening audience, Nikki, about the video for In the End and how that was shot. And I mean, it's like a little movie, right? I mean, you have a lot of things going on, and
there's a lot of things going on in that video. well, first of all, I'd have to say my, the big gift was John E. Bright. He's the director and the videographer who worked tirelessly with me to put it together. Was very generous with his time and effort. And it started with a collaborative process of just meeting with him a few times and talking through how I envisioned the song and how I wanted to interpret that visually. And we bounced around a lot of ideas. But in the end, it came down to budget and time constraints, really. People being available to shoot, location, how much money, you know, we could afford to put into the video. So we're very lucky. I can't believe how wonderful everybody's been to us. You and the Columbus scene. Dick's Den is a local, pretty historic jazz club in town, and they were very generous and let us just shoot at will in there, completely disrupting, you know, their patrons and taking over the place for a night. I put out this freaky invite to all of the people that I knew who were a little, you know, brazen or not afraid of acting out, and just said, hey, you know, if you want to be in a weird video shoot, wear something peculiar, show up here, think Twin Peaks meets, you know, People Are Strange by the Doors, and we'll go from there. And really, it was just a lot of collaboration with the videographer. It was really funny. I've got these clips that I saved where he literally sped everything up three times faster. So in the end, it's got this really slow, really constant pace to it. But as we're acting it out for the video so he can slow it down and make it very dreamlike in the video, at the editing process, we actually sped it up three times, and so everybody, including myself, were lip-syncing it at, like, Alvin and the Chipmunks level.
Oh, it was crazy.
I mean, like, you've got 50 people in a bar in these outfits, and they're dancing like they're moshing in a punk pit at a really fast pace, and I'm singing, everything is in the end, blah, 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 blah. It was just ridiculously fast, and we had a lot of fun, but in the end, he just really just did such a great job editing and putting together the whole concept. It was a lot of work, but I have to say he did most of the work.
Yeah, that's always been interesting to me. How about, like, when an artist, a songwriter writes a song and they get this idea of the song, and the song becomes pretty connected to them and personal to them, and then they're going to share it visually, and it's like that's a whole nother thing. It's like, you know, you can hear the song and people can imagine what it's like. And now you're going to take it visually and now, you know, show them what you think it's like. And I know that some artists, you know, have a hard time with that because they're thinking, I'm not real sure if we want to do that. And I know there have been some people that have thought, well, we'll just, you know, not do the video for this particular song because I'm not real sure I want people to have my vision of it. I want them to just think like reading a book and how you kind of imagine the characters and things. So how was that when you were putting that together? I mean, was that something that when you wrote the song, you were thinking this would be the visual part of it?
Oh, no, not at all. You know, the whole concept of the song in the end was kind of, it kind of came out of this idea of the old Western Once Upon a Time in the West, like this ultimate revenge song where, you know, at the end, you know, the last person standing is the hero, the most unlikely hero, you know, and the bad guys finally got it. But, oh no, I had lots of ideas for the video. I think we were thinking about famous dying scenes in Westerns, you know, reenacting those. We had lots of concepts. You know, really, when you're trying to interpret your song visually, I don't know if you ever really can do it very much like a book, right? We just really made the best of it. And it was really just, you know, the direction and the production really that I think made it come together. And somehow it yet still seems to represent the song. It still seems to grab onto something somehow. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, I think it's great. Now, when you we're going to talk about the album in it as an album, but when you wrote the song in the end, how did that work? I mean, when you write music, do you have something like, okay, I'm going to write this type of music? What's the songwriting method for you, Nikki? I mean, is it I love asking the question to songwriters, because every answer is different. And I always bring up the Jeff Tweedy thing where he, you know, he gave a great answer. I heard him on NPR and they asked him, you know, about that. And several people that I've heard interviewed, and they said, well, you know, I don't really know that much about it. I'm just walking down the street and there's a song. It's the whole song. But Jeff said that, you know, his answer was basically, you have to do the work. You have to really work hard at it. You have to be a good musician. Mm. You have to be studious. You have to listen. You have to understand everything that's going on and get that all packed into your subconscious. And when that's all in there, then it'll come out when it's ready to come out. And
that's interesting.
I've never heard anything quite explained like that. How does it work with you when you write a song? We could take this one in if you would like to talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, I'm exactly the same as Jeff Tweedy. I'm just kidding.
I confuse you guys all.
I'm so cool, you know. I wish I could walk down a street and have a whole song fall on my lap. It's a lot of work for me. I'm very dramatic in nature and in performance style. And I come from a theater background, and I'm a really big lover of old film. And old literature too. So I guess I look at things more from the dramatic slant. And typically, every song's slightly different, but typically it always comes from a hook. So I think I was really pissed off one day. I don't even remember what about. And I said it out loud, like driving my car in a minute of like, you know, pissy pants, you know, reactive, whatever. And I said, everybody gets it in the end. And I was like, oh, that's something, you know, and then you take that hook and you go, okay, what does that mean? Everybody gets it at the end, and you grow it from there. And, you know, I have pages of words and phrases that I've written down that I haven't used. And sometimes I'll go back and look at them and see if they're relative at all. Oftentimes, it's really important for me to have a really nice melody to it too. Otherwise, what's the point? So, you know, really just working from that hook and what would that melody be? And what is the feel of that, those words that I'm singing? What's my intention? And then I just kind of grow it from there and try to make the story grow from the meat and the potatoes of the song, you know.
Are you Nikki's biggest critic?
Oh, yeah.
When you're writing your music? I love that part of it too, because I've talked to people, Nikki, that have gone into the studio or they and who was it recently, a band, they like to just, let's get the band in the studio, let's record live, let's do it one take, maybe two, and that's it. And then, you know, I've talked to people that there's been 23, okay, take 24. And then they finally have to say that, you know, we can't, the band can't take it anymore. It's like,
yeah,
uncle.
That's crazy. that's extreme. I like to, I'm a compromise. So I am my own worst critic, but I also really respect my guys. My band are just the best guys and the best players for me. And they support me so well that if, when we're in studio, for example, recording any of these tracks on this record, you know, every once in a while, I'll just throw it up and I go, you know, F it, you know, I don't know if I can cuss on your blog or not. F it, that's
yes,
rock and roll, you know, that's rock and roll. You know, one of these is going to work out, we got to move on. Because I don't want to drain everybody of that energy that they're feeling. And I don't want to nitpick their day because I'm unsatisfied with what I'm doing. It doesn't make any sense to bog everybody down with that.
Yeah,
so,
that's interesting. Yeah, it's one of those things where I think it's really cool because if you're doing something like solo and it's just you, but when you bring a band in, it's just, there's something I love about that. But everybody coming together and the different vibe that the different musicians bring into it. Would you like to introduce the band? That'd be a good time.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So I think probably the person I should introduce first is Scott Gorsuch. He is my lead guitarist, and he backs me up on vocals. And he also happens to be my husband. So, and he's really prolific in his own right. He's got 3 albums out. His music is a different level, kind of like Queen meets Jellyfish meets Led Zeppelin. Just not crazy balls skills, you know. So here you've got, you know, your wife is Nikki Wonder, and she's over, you know, she's just always been a vocalist, but she does not really write songs or play guitar. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to write some songs. I'm going to play guitar. So he's been very patient in showing me, you know, different chords. He's been very patient in hearing my ideas and my insecurities and supporting me through that. So Scott's probably, you know, my right-hand man in most things, but in music, it's been a real joy to work with him. And then we've got Keith Hanlon, who's also the Scioto Records guy, but also mixed and engineered the album. He's my drummer. He's a fantastic cheerleader when I'm having my worst moments. So if I bring in a song to the group, okay, I get really nervous. Okay, you guys aren't going to like this. Okay, oh, well, just hear me out. I'll just try this one part, and I'll make a mistake. And I'll say, okay, never mind, never mind. And he'll go, no, man. Here's something. Do it again. And he just gives me that little push to really, you know, drop the BS and drop the criticism and just focus on the music. And I really value him. I don't think I could be doing this project without him. And then my bass player, James Wooster, who we all love so much. I actually got to play in a bluegrass band with him briefly when I was just learning guitar about a year before I started this project. Yeah. And he's a fantastic bass player. He plays in a bunch of different bands. And he's a beautiful singer, too. But he's just always had a really great vibe. He's the easiest going guy I've ever met. And, again, just really, really on board with this project. This is like a dream come true for me. It's probably the hardest thing to find a band that you can work with. You all have individual lives, you know, and everybody's got their own agenda. So when you're starting a project and you have a band, you really, really just want that to stick. You want it to be like, you know, the clique in high school, those best band of friends that are going to stick together and see something through. And it's really hard. Personalities are hard and everybody's got their own timetable and their own responsibilities. So these guys have really just thrown in for me, and I just love them. Absolutely.
It definitely works. It's amazing. Such an amazing group of people that have individual talents that blend together, Nikki, and make a sound of a band that the band sounds as one. That's the thing that I listen to, and I love that because I hear sometimes certain instruments or certain talents can pop out, but when you hear it as a whole and it's like one whole band, it's great. My guest is Nikki Wonder of the Bloodthirsty Virgins. You can go on their website, bloodthirstyvirgins.com, and I highly recommend the album, their debut album, self-titled debut album. You've heard some songs. You're going to hear some songs tonight. But I know that you need to go out. I can't hypnotize people. I've been working on it, but it hasn't been working. That they can have to buy people's records. Don't just stream people's records, people. Buy them. Support the independent musician, because it's what you got to do. You just got to do it. So that's my soapbox for tonight, and I really believe that. Let's play another song. I'm going to pick a song, then you can pick a song, but I'm going to pick one.
Okay.
And that we can play, and The Skin. Now, would you like to talk about that? I mean, all the songs, and then why my brain is kind of flipping around here. When you put this together, did you mean for the songs to go in this a specific order, or how did that put it together?
No, not at the time of writing the music. It was a lot of, I can remember we had little sticky notes and we kept reorganizing where they would fit and how much space we had on each side for recording on vinyl. You're limited on what you can put on the side before the sound starts to get mushy. And there were actually a couple songs that I cut that I wasn't really happy with. The Prelude was kind of this weird, whimsical thing I came up with at the last minute. I said, hey, guys, guess what? I'm throwing something in there. We're going to screw this other song, and I've got this idea. Let's do this, and it's going to lead into In the End. I think originally I thought In the End would be the end of the album, but somehow it just kind of worked in my brain to reorganize things that way. So everything was written really at different times with different intentions, and then I just tried to really hear musically how they might flow together and put it together that way.
Well, let's play The Skin. And this is the Bloodthirsty Virgins, and we will be back with Nikki Wonder, and we're going to ask her some questions about how she got started in music and what was like being little Nikki Wonder growing up. And we'll be right back after this.
This is the part of the play when you might want to leave.
And we're back with Nikki Wonder of the Bloodthirsty Virgins. You can go on their website, bloodthirstyvirgins.com. And that was The Skin from their self-titled debut album. So, Nikki, you mentioned that you were going to start another video of a song. Can you tell us what song that's going to be? Are you to reveal that yet?
It's kind of top secret right now. We've recently been blessed with getting access to a very nice theater in town. So I'm trying to keep it kind of under wraps so that hopefully we're working with the same videographer. He's just so brilliant. And hopefully with the venue being a little bit more unusual again, you know, and, you know, I had two specific songs in mind, but I'm kind of volleying back and forth and I'm waiting to see how that plays out. I recently got to go see a magic show and I was really inspired by some of the performers there. So my mind is whirling with ideas right now to incorporate into it.
That's pretty cool. I think it, you know, the thing that I love about I don't know. I mean, it sounds so generic, but about art and music is there's just no boundaries to it. And you can do and express yourself in so many different ways that, you know, I sometimes, you know, we go back to like the 1967, you know, the Summer of Love and all the amazing music that came out during that period of time. And, you know, there are people who think, you know, it was a renaissance of music, Nikki, that, you know, this little window opened up in the universe and all this music flew out. And I've had people, you know, that really believe that. And then it, you know, it's kind of shut, but really think it's shut. I think that it's like there's a way that, you know, musicians and artists are connecting with that now. And I'm going to ask you this question that I've been asking this a lot in my interviews in the last, I don't know, not I'd say since January, around that period of time, about the responsibility of, I guess the word's responsibility, I've used a couple other words, but we can use that one today, of the artist and of the people that are creating music and the art community and the musicians, because there's a lot of things going on in the world right now that, you know, you may like, you may not like directions that are happening, but like we talked about the creativity of the artist and like in books and in music, how that you can break through and you can do these wonderful things and you can teach these kids how to do this. And you were talking about, you know, watching the magic show and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, there's just so many things that can happen. And that's, I don't know if it makes any sense, but I think a lot of the responsibility right now to like carry on that creativity that kids can pick up and that people can express themselves is with artists and with musicians and with poets and people like that. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, I think historically that's been the main purpose of it all. You know, to provoke thought and to engage people and inspire them in some way that you hope is meaningful.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that this, yeah. And that's one of the things I think with like, with kids, and my daughter, she's a social worker, and I've talked to teachers and how one of the things that they can get kids is to just express themselves through art, and they can find out so they can get through so many things that way. And then you find out that a lot of these projects and programs are being cut and the funds are being stopped. And I think, you know, there's nothing worse that could happen to our society than that. But I always think that the, you know, the artist is going to rise up anyway, no matter what. But when you look at that, and when, what do you think is the response? Is that, I think that's a pretty good word, the responsibility of the artist to kind of keep things free and alive in this day of 2017.
Well, I think a lot of pressure falls on the artist because, you know, initially the whole goal is to have people want to give a shit about what you're creating, you know, and to listen to you and want to listen to you. So I think it's easy to put yourself in a box and kind of go, well, I don't want to be a bummer at my show, or I don't want to be divisive. But right now, quite frankly, you know, now's the time to draw your line in the sand, you know, if you want to live and be creative and be a lover of humans, you know. So I really feel that, you know, although my songs might seem not right on point, you know, there is some relative, you know, concepts in them about good versus evil. And I think really just being an honest human and connecting with people and not being afraid to voice your opinion is ultimately the best thing you can do. I think we're all getting, you know, suffocated by the current climate and not feeling hopeless, even most of us, and not knowing what to do. But I think if we just keep yelling and creating and, you know, flipping the bird, you know, we'll all find each other out there and we'll all survive this together.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes it is a little frustrating, but I do see that in the artist and people just, you know, it's like it's this incredible gift that, you know, you as a musician have and as, you know, people have in the art field. So I think it's great. And one of the things that when I was talking to this one person that was a teacher, they said when they work with kids, they want them to express themselves, whether it's in painting or whatever it is, and they do it with no, absolutely no censorship. It's like, just let everything that you're feeling, you know, put it out there. And I think that's another thing that I think is real important with music and with art. It's like, okay, let's get that out there. You know, let's get the music out there. Let's get, you know, like with hip hop, there's some incredible things going on right now in that field with music that is just mind blowing. I mean, it's a little bit, to me, it's, you know, I think that sometimes you get in a box with music and you can say, oh, we'll fit everybody into this, or we want to be famous, so we'll fit this way. But I love it when, you know, people send me music that's different and creative, and hopefully that makes sense. But, well, let's jump back and let's jump back in the time machine and let's go back. When you were growing up, how did you get interested in, you talked about the theater and in music, and what were some of the things and influences and some of the things that you look back at and think, wow, maybe this person really helped me along, you know, to help me in my career as an artist. How did it all start out?
That's a really great question. You know, my whole original concept of art was being an actress and trying to really seriously go at that. And I spent a lot of time doing theater and musical theater and working with really, you know, alternative-minded production companies in Columbus. I moved to Seattle and studied theater there, and then I found an acting teacher in Portland and relocated to study with her. And my ultimate goal was to go to Los Angeles and be in like B movies. I just love weird, dark, unusual movies where the characters, you know, you really have to try to piece together what the hell their motivations are, and somehow it's provocative to watch, you know. I was really into that. But I mean, if I look back at it, I was okay at it, but I wasn't really great at it. You know, I just really wanted to be a star, or, you know, be on TV or whatever. And I had a little bit of success. I had a couple of small things happen, but I moved back to Columbus, and I think I really started being a creative on my own right when I hit 30, a little late in life. You know, a little Nikki Wonder was just Nicole Haygood, you know, little mousy, misfit, awkward, didn't know how to talk to people, freckles, cowlick in the front of her hair, and watching MTV obsessively every day. So, you know, there was something cooking in there, but it wasn't really, you know, cohesive at any point until I was much later in life. At 30, I was sitting in a bar with a girlfriend singing along to David Bowie on the jukebox. And she said, you need to sing in a band. I was like, no, I can't do that. She's like, I know somebody who's a bass player and we've got to call him. So somehow I must've got drunk enough. And I met this guy, Dan Segrais. He's a stand-up bass player in town, rockabilly dude. He's very awesome. And he introduced me to Matt Newman, who's formerly of Ronald Cole and the Trillionaires. And I auditioned very nervously singing Miss Otis Regrets in his living room to him. And we started a band called Jack Meat, which lasted a few years. But it was really cool, and it exposed me. I think probably my number one mentor would have been Matt Newman. He's a really unusually interesting guy, fantastic musician, but he's got walls and walls of vinyl. And he's got obscure stuff like Veretta Dillard and Eartha Kitt. And, you know, he exposed me to so much music I didn't realize was there. It really influenced me in a creative way. So I got to front a band and wear cocktail gowns and sing really weird, like, rock and roll, punk rock versions of, you know, Eartha Kitt songs. It was pretty fabulous.
Wow.
And at that point, I think that's where Nikki Wonder really started to come together and, you know, develop a style and maybe a musical point of view as well.
Was there always this, when, like, if you look back, Nikki, when you were starting out and when you were, like, in front of people, you said, you know, you were very interested in the theater and in movies and things like that. Was that always a comfortable feeling for you to do that, to perform in front of people?
Oh yeah, I was total ham. I needed tons of attention. You know, it's a sad thing to admit, but I think it's natural for most kids. You know, everybody wants to feel, you know, exciting and appreciated. And, you know, my mom was a single mom and worked a lot. And, you know, that was my way of trying to ham it up and get some attention. So, yeah. I've always been comfortable in front of people, but it's funny, when I was at the magic show last night, I could barely speak when they called me up to participate. I was totally in a different forum, and it wasn't my stage. So all of a sudden I got very shy, you know. But as far as me expressing when it's my time on the stage, I've always been very over the top, I guess I would say. Ready and willing.
That, you know, that's really good. You know what's funny about when I look back at me, I've never been talented at singing or any of that stuff. I've always loved doing it, and I came from a musical family, so I would do it. And no matter what, you know, people would, I never had a problem doing it either. And I look back at that, I thought, man, that's kind of weird that I would, you know, I wouldn't have a problem singing in front of people. No matter how terrible I was like, I loved it. And it was like, you know,
yeah.
I don't really care if people like it or not, because I wanted to be Eric Burdon anyway. So I thought this is a good way to do it. And I'm just going to get up there and get in my own world and sing, you know, and then, and I think that when I look back at that, I wonder where that came from, you know, that nerve that I had to, because I thought if I would possibly had any talent, that would have been a different path I've gone down, but I still enjoyed it, and I still today, you know, have no problem with it, you know, getting in front of people and singing and having people take the
good
mic away and all that, you know.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Do it. I always tell everybody, I've got a couple people in my life, I always tell everybody that singing is good for your heart, and I truly mean that. There's something about having that resonation come through your body and letting it out and expressing yourself in that way, because it's, I don't know what it is. It's maybe like higher level spirituality or something. I don't know. But I know that when you really let yourself do it, you're opening up, you know, your heart and your energy, and you're kind of freeing yourself in that moment. And I've got a couple friends in my life, I won't say who they are, who are incredibly tone deaf. And I love singing at the top of my lungs with them. I love it when people sing. I think it's the best thing you can do for yourself. I love it.
Oh, isn't it awesome? It's like one thing I was thinking about when this show started off, when we started this song, thank God for the mute button, because I'm singing right along with you. And without the mute button, I think that would have been a pretty rough way to start the show. Actually, I've done that. I did that once. It was, hopefully no one's, I've done quite a few of these. So I never really went back, and I hope nobody was listening, but I totally agree with everything you're saying about it. I think it's a way that you just get in touch with a part of yourself it's free. It's like, you know, that's why, you know, when I hear different singers, there was a, I had a bluegrass band. You were talking about that a little earlier, and some guys out around Springfield had a bluegrass band, and they came in the studio and where I work in London, Ohio, and they came in and sat up and played, and the guy, the banjo player, this is a pretty cool story, and his mom came in, and it's Bo and Dora DeLauder, and they came in and to the studio and sang, and her voice, to me, man, it just melted me. It was unbelievable. It was so honest, so pure. And it was like there was nothing pretentious at all about it. It was incredible. And I've had people tell me, oh, that band's pretty good, except I don't like the vocals, you know, because it's a raw vocal. But I just, you know what I mean? It's like, it's so real. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't, and another interesting thing about that story is she had she was in Nashville and had a record contract for her when she was a young lady. And she had, you can go and listen to her songs. And I just, when I listen to that, you know, people singing, it's just like, wow, that's part of her, you know, that she's expressing. That's really awesome. But now it's time.
Yeah, I've seen I've only seen a couple of vocalists who do that. One went by the name of Sarah Asher, and she now goes under Sarah Mann. She's married. She's in Kentucky now. But she's very free. She's like a female, young, hip Bob Dylan, but she's very unassuming. It could give two shits about what you think about her. She's amazing. She puts this ukulele in through an amplifier, and she's got this sweet little southern voice when she sings, and she is just something. She really, like, my body resonates listening to her. And then also there's a woman in Columbus who goes by Counterfeit Madison, and I tell you, I've seen her live maybe 5 times, and there's never a time that I don't, like, get emotionally overwhelmed just listening to her.
Wow.
Amazing.
That is amazing. That's really cool. So, Nikki, this is the time when you get to pick a song we can play off the album.
Oh gosh, I'm totally surprised now. Well, you know, I love so many people for so many reasons, but mostly so many people have really loved us through this, and I would like to do Side B, As We Fall Apart. That's the only song on the album that's not mine. It's written by Don Parrish Schlottman, and he's currently a New Yorker, but he's a former Columbus resident, and I heard this song because he would share his stuff online, and his song is very sparse the way he does it himself and just a guitar. And it was such a beautiful song. I said, dude, you got to let me do this song on my record. Mm-hmm. I really, really love it. It's very honest.
Let's play it. As We Fall Apart, Bloodthirsty Virgins. You're listening to John Talk Radio, and we'll be right back.
Finished. The cosmic keeps it hard. the secret name I courted from the watermark.
Is the Bloodthirsty Virgins. You can go on their website, bloodthirstyvirgins.com. Nikki Wonder, Scott Gorsuch, Keith Hanlon, and James Wooster. Thank you so much, Nikki, for being on the show. I had a great time talking to you. I just hope the best for you guys.
Oh, God, we can't thank you enough. I love your show, and I really appreciate you supporting us. Thank you so much.
And I think you said you were going to be playing in Reynoldsburg soon. That's not too far. Yeah, I would love to come and hear you guys play. There's nothing I like better than to hear live music. So it's just, it looks, and I will talk about it on the show and try to get, if I could get my family. I told you how that, you know, we have 5 grown kids, and I just get that crew there. That should be quite an adventure for you, getting my crew there.
Excellent. We're a little bit wilder in person. So, yeah, we throw down.
That sounds like fun. Thanks so much, Nikki, and have a great time with your music and with everything going on. I just think, you know, I love you guys. I think you're awesome, and I've fallen in love with the album. I think it's an amazing album. So thank you so much, and anything you'd like to say in closing?
You know, I was thinking about it. I was listening to that song. I guess I would just say I started learning to play the guitar 3 years ago and started writing my own material about a year and a half ago. Don't give up, old people. It's never too late to just fucking chase a dream, you know? Never too late to chase a dream. I'm having a blast, and I don't regret any of it.
No, I agree with you there. You're doing great. So thanks so much. And thanks, everybody, for listening to John Tuck Radio through the years and supporting independent musicians. And everybody have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you later.
Died today, and I'm saving all my bullets for someone with your name. I'm shaking. Every bit of me is frozen cold, and I'm saving all my bullets for the day you come home. You shouldn't have done that. You know that thing that you did. You shouldn't be walking all out to live. I'm trying to forget your face grinning down at me. The day will come, I promise, when I set you free. That's the girl you left at your feet, lives like a stranger, lives defeat. I've waited a lifetime to bring you to your knees. I made a promise today. Piece of me has died today, and I'm saving all my bullets for someone with your name. I'm shaking, every bit of me is frozen cold, and I'm saving all my bullets for the day you come. My bullet for the day.